You're listening to This QPOC Life, a podcast that looks at the world through the lens of a queer person of color. We strive to be a safe and inclusive listening space for queer people of color. We also have a variety of views and opinions. Please leave comments on our website, thisqpoc.life, on our Facebook page, or send us a tweet at thisqpoclife. Help us build this QPOC community.
Yes!
While you're at it, make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Just search for This QPOC Life on your favorite platform.
And Spotify!
Update that.
Don't forget to check out our Patreon page, too. For as little as a dollar a month, you can become a Patreon of This QPOC Life. You can invest in this podcast and help us continue to create quality content by and for QPOC.
Yes!
Wow.
Well.
Isn't that fun to do with a beat?
Look at.
Look who's back.
back again. I'm like Alyssa Edwards.
Oh my gosh.
Who is that?
Alyssa Edwards, a contestant.
The drag queen.
Oh, right. Yes. I don't know that realm.
I almost said This Drag Race Life, but this I was like, that's a different show.
That's funny.
That's the after show.
But speaking of Drag Race, well, we'll get into it. I'm sure you're going to talk about that.
During our check-in.
Yeah.
Goodness.
I've been telling everybody. I'm like, I know people who was in that. Mm-hmm. And I could have been in it, but I was too busy.
So. I couldn't have.
Both of us could have done it. We were both busy, though.
Yeah, right? Sure.
Because your schedule's crazy.
I mean, well, we could have tried. I didn't even try.
You're doing a million things right now. It was actually pretty easy. It was a lot of fun. It was a fun process.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that world soon.
And it sounded amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll talk about it. The listeners don't know what they're talking about.
You'll find out pretty soon, because you know what we have to
like
do
in
first.
5 minutes.
Right, exactly. Welcome back, Zach. It's good to see you.
Zach
good
never to left, too. He's just been on I was vacation. Just,
yeah, I was Trim Spa.
Trim Spa.
Trim Spa.
Is that like Fan Spa Life? Castle?
No, Trim Spa is that thing that Anna Nicole Smith did.
Oh,
it was
right.
Mostly just like a diet thing. I don't think it was an actual spa.
Yeah.
I mean, in my mind, it was like she would go there and then that's where she would live for a while. And then they would like a camp. And then they would like...
Was it for weight?
Let you eat. Yeah.
Yeah. Because wasn't she dealing with like... I know she passed away, so I'm trying to be sensitive.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
But I remember when she did, and I was in college anyway. Mm-hmm. And they made such a big deal of it. I didn't know that she was that big of a celebrity. But was she on drugs, basically, is what I'm trying
probably.
To say.
Probably.
Because I was going to ask, was Trim Spa a detox center?
I mean, detoxing your, like... The food you eat, but it wasn't a legit, actual detox. A substance abuse place.
Right.
No,
it was just food abuse.
Yeah.
Hate and you. Adore Delano's Anna Nicole
Oh
Smith.
My God, which just rekindled the fires of how wonderful Anna was. Oh.
Wait, so who was she? Like, because
she's a Playboy model. Yeah. And
is that what it was?
Well, she started off as a Calvin Klein jeans model, mm-hmm. and that's how she like really got big. Then it was like the Playboy stuff, and then she
sort of just became a household name.
Yeah, she had like her own like reality show.
I just remember. Yeah, she. Yeah. Oh
I think she dated Hugh Hefner.
Mm. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't really know much about her life.
Dated Hugh Hefner.
I mean,
now you can. I mean, probably. What's that person? Ezra. Whatever.
Ezra Miller.
Probably built a time machine and went back to.
No, thank you. No, thank you.
Okay.
Keep your problematic ass
Wait a
movies.
Second. Wait a second. So I was on, this is actually relevant to this QPOC life. Ezra Miller, yeah. I saw that bunny photo shoot. I saw the GQ. So I saw, I think the Playboy one was the mm-hmm. bunny photo shoot. Yes. And then the GQ one was the one where I was like, meh, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But like, y'all know, I don't know what it is about like bunny people, but like
Final Fantasy 12
as well. But I just thought that was super hot, and then all that stuff dropped about like, oh, he's trash because
I wasn't having it.
He made a document. He helped direct a documentary about Darren Wilson.
It was a
Darren Wilson is the person who killed
interpretation of the Darren Wilson story.
Right,
That was completely unnecessary.
However, then I looked into it because I saw all the people in the comments, and you know the comments are a place to either find credibility or just
lose all of it.
lose all of it with hyped up justification. conversation that's absolute bullshit. And they're like, did you watch the video? And so, like, the thing was, it was co-produced or directed with Ezra Miller and then I don't know the name
another
of the other
person of color, yeah.
Who is a Black Lives Matter figure.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, all right. But I landed on, so then I didn't know that it wasn't a documentary because everybody was saying documentary.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the like issue a dramatic was that, interpretation.
Like, I don't want to throw, like, we talked about it on the Facebook and like, I will say that I wouldn't have ever made it. If I was in Ezra's vision, no, right. I would not make that. However, I think the issue with the narrative was that I don't want to throw them under the bus, but I will. Afropunk made an article and they didn't watch the video and they called it a documentary and that got shared a huge amount of times. And in reality, it was like
it was a dramatization of like it had a plot twist. And the plot twist was that Darren Wilson, you think that he's talking to somebody the whole time and lying. But actually, he's just sitting in a room talking to himself in a mirror, lying before he goes into an interview. Yeah. So trying
he's like
to
rehearsing his
he's
story.
Rehearsing his lies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like it made a very poignant point, but it also did it 1 year after the killing of Mike Brown and the launching of Black Lives Matter and all that in 2014. So they made that in 2015. My problem with it was that it was too close and it was exploitative of Michael Brown's death. And it was basically clickbait.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and also, it's not clear what's going on in that film until you see the very end.
Exactly.
And if you don't stick around to the very end, you're like, what am I watching?
You're just going
to
assume,
But also, like, I, this is going to sound terrible. As a creator, I've stopped taking people's intelligence for granted. So I'm sort of afraid that that would have gone over people's heads a little bit.
All right, even if they would have watched it, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
True. That's very true.
But long story short, I still think Ezra Miller is hot, so I don't know what to say about that.
I stand him when it was the, what was that movie?
Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Oh, no, I don't care about that.
So I didn't know that he was...
No, the magic one.
Yeah, so I was just going to say,
Potter one.
I didn't know that was him.
Fantastic Beast.
I stand up when it was him and Colin Farrell, but as we see, it's not Colin Farrell anymore. So.
That whole story came up, the one we just talked about, came up because Fantastic Beasts 2 or The Crimes of Grindelwald came out, right? And so that's when I started seeing a lot of Ezra Miller's stuff
he's
come
back?
Out. Yeah, he's in the second one.
I thought he died.
Oh, well, maybe that's a spoiler.
I don't remember.
He's in it. Oh. And so I was like, wait, he was in Fantastic Beasts? So I looked him up and he was like, oh, that's who he was?
Yeah,
and I was like, he's not even that cute.
The
but
creepy,
then I saw the new pictures and I was like, wait, when did he become so cute?
Well,
anyway,
I think that he was
problematic
like...
faves. My name is Jonathan, a.k.a. Blation FMA.
Well, before we even get into that, everybody, this is...
This Q-Pac Live!
Talking about later with those sermons.
That was fantastic.
FYI, we haven't done the podcast so long that actually introductions come before that.
Yeah, they do, but
no, they don't.
Yeah, they always do.
Like, I'm so and so, I'm so and so and so, and this is
oh gosh, I'm completely off my game. Sorry, everyone.
I mean,
it's fine.
Yeah,
so let's do introductions. Why don't you start?
We gotta wash away that Ezra Miller whole thing because I don't want to be.
Ask me my caster self.
My name is Jonathan. So Jonathan, aka Blation FMA. My pronouns are he, him, and his. Who's next?
You may call me Jolie, and that is how you'll find me on the internet. And my pronouns are they, them, theirs, and geode.
Okay. Oh, yeah. JoJo has gone on a journey. And
it's been a pronoun journey lately.
Yeah.
I'm just like, why do I feel like being called today? Geode.
I mean, that's the beauty of Grindr, because you can, for pronouns, you can like you can break down what you need.
I see people who like say, if you put a joke in there, then yeah, I'm not talking to you. And I'm like, mine says Maxine Waters. And I'm like, oh.
That's amazing. Whoops.
Is it disrespectful?
Maybe that explains why
nobody's talking
to you. Well, I mean, you know, I think, well, on the one hand, yeah, pronouns are serious. But on the other hand, like, don't take gender so seriously.
I think that's the point of it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. Oh, my name is Carlos Rios, and my pronouns are herses. You can find me at, you can find my Venmo at Zachary Aris, and you can donate to that, because everyone loves Carlos. Also, my name is Zach, and you can find me at Zachary Aris, and my pronouns are he, him, his, she, her, hers. Anything else is totally okay.
Great.
And this is this is the part where we're going to say this Q-Pock Live.
I was doing that Sissy Houston note.
I was trying to do a whistle note. Note the whistle didn't come out.
Oh, I can't. Oh, we're so messy, and you know you love it.
I promise we have some direction going on here somewhere.
Do we?
Well, Carlos is out this week, and so is our producer, Pedro. They're both at the same holiday party because they work at the same place.
Oh, happy holiday.
And Carlos had a cute, like, black and gold, like, brocade jacket moment. I was like, you better.
Come on, sequenced brocade.
Yes. I was like, I just need you to put on that kilowatt powder from Fenty. Just dab that on them cheekbones.
Bam.
So how have you all been lately?
Oh my gosh. It's been
a minute.
It has been.
We had Thanksgiving happen. We had all of November happen. Mm. I did the World AIDS Day episode. But no, it was pretty fun. Ton is a really nice guy. And I hope to get him in here for a special episode.
That would be awesome.
More about some stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So Thanksgiving has happened. A whole bunch of holiday movies are coming out. But JoJo,
yes.
What's new?
Oh, my. So a lot happened in November. I feel like I have a lot to catch people up on. What we were talking about earlier in the show, Carlos and I had the privilege of recording the RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 4 promo that dropped.
Oh, my goodness.
That's been running.
A couple of weeks ago now. And we are holding them a 10 or 1 part with a new T1 to the to the PAO and, you know, singing beautifully and high. It was a lot of fun. Our good friend Johnny Adorino arranged and conducted us at the studio. We got to record at the Power Station, which is a legendary studio here in the city. And I walked in there and was like, holy shit, this is amazing. Because, like, the room is completely, like, it's acoustic treated, but it's all wood.
Mm. Oh, like the Domenica Center.
Beautiful. Yeah. And, like, they've got vintage microphones on everybody. It was really, really, really cool.
Wow. Nice.
Did Johnny arrange the lyrics as well?
No. So the VH1 folks wrote those lyrics. Mm.
So what was the story there? You were, like, now that we can finally talk about this... because we couldn't talk about it before.
So
there were some of the queens were like, I'm not singing those lyrics.
Yeah, so while we were rehearsing, like once a RuPaul found out that the names of the queens were in the lyrics and she was not happy about it. And the VH1 people were like, how else are the singers supposed to learn what to sing? So they had us all sign NDAs.
Right.
So we gave them a scratch recording so they could actually film the commercial. And so at the end of it, there's a part where the drag queens lip sync, You'll Love Us All Hail RuPaul. And they told us that it was a thing because a few of the drag queens refused to lip sync that part. They didn't tell us who it was, but all of us were like speculating about who it could have been. And I think we sort of all landed
on the same
on who it was going to be.
Oh, yeah. Let's say who it was.
Who was it?
It was Jasmine Masters, Valentina, Naomi Smalls, Gia Gunn, and...
That's it.
Those were the ones that didn't want to say it?
Yeah.
That's like all the ones that were in the commercial,
basically. Even though... Like, Monique Hart sang it, and she's the most Christian.
Right? But the funny, like, Jasmine
Masters...
Wait, that's
why they didn't want to say it? Because it said, all hail RuPaul?
Because...
Like, in a worshiping way?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like, the lyrics of, like...
Yeah, so, like, Jasmine Masters was the smart one about it.
She just...
She went, you'll love us all, and then just sort of, like,
gave a note.
Got real goofy with her mouth afterward, and I was like, "Yeah, that's a smart girl. That's a smart girl." But you have Naomi, Valentina, and Gia. Gia is the one who I understand.
Oh yeah,
can be pissed off at RuPaul for sure. But I was like, Naomi and Valentina.
Well, you know, I don't know any of these girls, but I do know that Jasmine is smart because our close friend Daniel tagged me in an Instagram post of hers sharing the Patti LaBelle video. That 3 years in a row, number one.
Number one.
My name is Jasmine Masters, and I have something to say.
I mean, Jonathan, you really, now that you've had the number one video of all time.
With no credit.
Number one holiday video.
With no credit. I mean, white people are washing their dishes to this now. Some Twitter gay posted it last night and was like, it's that time again. And I was looking at the responses and he was like, yeah, my dad just, some old white man washing dishes in the kitchen, just cracking up while his gay son plays the Patti LaBelle video on the family home system. I was like, okay. I mean, I guess we've got, it started with the... I Made It Go Viral in 2016, and then the next year, 2017, it was Kev on Stage and D-Ray McKenson.
Took the video. Stripped it.
And then now this year, it's like the Amsterdam Club of somewhere on Facebook is doing, you know? So I'm getting all these messages of people like, is this your video? And I'm like, yes. But you know what? I'm just happy to bring joy.
The story is watermark everything.
Yeah, I guess. Y'all told me that last year, so I'm going to do it from now on. But who's going to make a hit like that? I'm going to get into content creation. So for me, speaking of which, I do have the screenings here at Brick.
Yes, I can't wait.
Ooh. If you follow me on Instagram specifically, I put kind of hint toward it in my stories sometimes when we're on production shoots, when we're writing, when we're meeting with the actors. So since August, we've been working on these three movies. And if you're in the New York area, it's whatever Wednesday. I think it's December 12th.
I just bit my tongue.
Oh, no.
Ow.
Oh, God.
That was random.
Are you okay?
I'm fine. I'm just shocked. Just
shocked. I remember one time I bit my... I bit my tongue so hard that it bled. I think I was only like 5 years old. Oh. We were in the car going to Los Angeles. We lived in San Diego. We were going to see Wheel of Fortune live.
Oh.
And so I bit my tongue so hard that it was bleeding. And my Lola had to get me like a napkin.
Oh,
and there
no.
was blood all over it. But I guess I forgot it by the time we got to Wheel of Fortune because I was too hyped to see the wheel and the board. Mm. They had to roll it off back in the day. This was like 1990.
Oh.
Like dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So
December 12th.
Yeah, December 12th. That's a Wednesday. Come on out. I'm really hoping that they have like a QA session with the actors, directors, and the people who worked on the movie, like the movies, so that I can be shady because there's been some shady shit that's happened.
So you can sit in those
chairs.
She's
going to be petty.
Oh, yes. I'm going to be so petty.
Be that panelist.
Yeah. What about you, Zach?
Oh. New stuff. I had a very interesting phone conference call with an organization last night.
Oh.
And
oh dear.
I think it's difficult because I think we as QPOC and people of a certain generation, our moral compass tends to be in a very specific direction.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that direction in our hearts to be right. And so when there are people around us who hesitate in that direction, who are looking at more of the status quo and what's acceptable, who may not want to move in the direction we're moving, it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
And it was about 20, 30 minutes into the call that after I said my sermon and my opinion on the matter and went on and on and on, because it's a very difficult matter. And
this is a volunteer organization outside of work. Like, it's not...
Yeah, no, this is not my place of employment.
Oh, okay.
It was about an individual who did something very terrible. And I freely was using that individual's name. When we were discussing things on the call, and another person on it like kept interrupting me and said, you know, they have a right to privacy. You can't say that their name because this matter was discussed anonymously and that's privileged information. And, you know, my thought is that I brought this information to you, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
I found out about it privately as a private citizen. B, you are not a lawyer. So you cannot tell me to do anything. C, we are not a legal group, so I don't have to do anything. D, the right of privacy only applies when it is when you can assume that you have reasonable privacy. If you're at a place with 10 other people, you cannot assume privacy. So he kept on like interrupting me and saying that. And then I said, you can tell me the rule. You can explain to me why I'm breaking the rule. But nevertheless, she persisted. Mm-hmm. And I continued my sermon. I said what I needed to say, and then...
So you were Maxine Waters.
I did. I reclaimed...
You channeled another minute.
Not another minute. You know, in Sailor Moon, in season one, at the end of it, when they're about to defeat Queen Beryl, mm-hmm. and all of the other Sailor Scouts, like, I was Serena holding my wand.
Please don't
my
say
wand.
That name. That Serena. Is not her name. It's Usagi.
Oh, her white name, her American name. Her American. I was Usagi holding the Millennium Crystal wand. And no, it wasn't. Yeah, they had the Millennium Crystal one. Yeah, mm-hmm. holding the Millennium Crystal wand.
But that's also the American name. But okay.
You know what?
I'm a weeb. I'm sorry. It's the Mabaroshi no Kinzui
show. Did you say weeaboo? Because I think you just said weeaboo.
I did.
Anyway, so I was Usagi holding that thing. And then the other Sailor Scouts were... laying their hands upon me to
in
channel
the
this
name
energy
of the moon,
and it was Maxine Waters, it was Elizabeth Warren, it was Kamala Harris, Alexandria Ocasio, it was all of them saying, "Go forth, girl." Get
oh my
this.
Gosh! Can somebody please Photoshop that together? We are putting a call out to our listeners. Please Photoshop
please.
That.
It was
Stacey
Abrams lifting my hand and guiding it. To fight this energy, and so
does that mean Beto is the tuxedo?
Yeah, Beto's tuxedo mask. He could throw that rose wherever he wanted. Anyway, after I had said all this, there were responses from people. There was encouragement from some as to processes that we could take as next steps, but from people that I really love and respected and looked up to for a long time, there. It didn't feel like they were willing to die on a hill that we should all be willing to die on.
Hmm. Yeah, this just speaks toward the nature of like just institutions and establishments.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. That's
because
what I want to say.
I was listening to an episode of The Nod, which is my new favorite other podcast. It's by Gimlet. It's Black mm-hmm. culture. And the episode was about being Black in the fashion industry
how
it's so much nepotism, and you have to know, and you have to be like an intern, but you are expected to wear like Chanel and $10,000 mm-hmm. outfits.
Right.
But it's like, where do you get that money, especially if you're Black and you don't have
you
generational
don't come from
wealth?
Money, yeah.
Right.
But the one thing that stuck out to me, and the person they were talking to was the new editor-in-chief of Teen Vogue, and it's because she's Black.
Yep.
And she was like, so that's my experience. But also, you know, she didn't expose, but everybody kind of assumed like the bandwagon thing right now is being woke or being like, what can we do to say that we have checked off the box of diversity?
Right.
And so that applies in the fashion industry and across all industries where you
entertainment,
you know, performance arts organizations. And it's like, you know, when people say, oh, we need to care about diversity, we need to care about this thing, we mm-hmm. need to talk about inclusion and equity.
Then show me. Show me that you do.
But then if you are faced with a situation like this one.
Where you are expected to like deal mm-hmm. out consequences.
This is the moment.
This is it. This is
the
like,
precipice.
This is your moment to prove. If you stand for what you say, to walk the walk and to talk the talk, the talk that you talk, are you going to walk it?
And that's what
I saw. Some of these, some of these people, some of these institutions, some of these organizations, it's like they choked. Yeah. I don't even know if they choked.
Which during this, when we were having this discussion, they were literally visibly choking of what to say. And I looked at them and I just started getting emotional. I started crying on camera, and I just stood up, and I shut my computer, and I walked away. 30 minutes into the hour call, and I thought long and hard. Who's yelling?
I think that was a sneeze.
I think that was a sneeze.
Oh.
Somebody keeps interrupting our podcast with these sneezes.
Mm. They do. Is the on-air light on? No.
Oh, well, you know, our fault.
Hello.
But I thought to myself, because I know that you have thoughts on this too.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what you're talking about, but I do have thoughts because I deal in similar veins. Right. In similar institutions and structures.
I thought to myself when I walked out of that room, and I think that this could be applicable for so many people in this situation. I walked out of it and I said, I'm done. I don't want to be a part of this anymore. I won't be complicit with it. I won't stand with it. There are other things to do. And I left because I was at work when I was on this call, and I left work and I was just emotional and crying. I went to a quick 2-hour D appointment and then to clear my head.
Oh, okay.
The downside though, it was on like the lower east side by City Hall. So it took I had to walk through police checkpoints. It took forever. Oh, I did not appreciate it. However,
but was it good?
Yeah, it was great. And then I left, and all of a sudden, all of these quotes came to me. It was obviously
spirit of Maya Angelou.
The things that a good D appointment will do for you.
Obviously, it was the Elizabeth Warren, nevertheless, she persisted quote. But it was also some other ones. It was in the arc of the moral universe is long. And it may, I'm changing the quote here.
Okay, because I know how this one goes.
And it may bend. It may bend toward justice. But bitch, I'm ready for a hard left.
Okay.
Another thought, be the change you wish to see in the world. Another thought was, I actually had a great quote
while you're looking it up.
I have it right here.
The one about being the change the thing that like keeps me steeped in this thing. Because when we're talking about these institutions, whether it's the fashion industry, just like I illustrated with the example of the fashion industry and the black girl in it, it's because all of these industries are overrun or so white.
By white people.
It's very white.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we talk about being the change, and when we talk about being so tired as queer people of color in these organizations, and people are like, why do you stay around it then? Like, if it's stressing you out, why do you stay? Because you want to be the change.
You have to have...
Because if you're not there, then who's going to do it?
It's like Kerry Washington, what she said when... I remember when Jada Pinkett Smith was like, I am not going to the Oscars this year. But Kerry Washington had the great point. She's like, listen, in order for these conversations to happen, we have to be at the table.
Right, because who's going to be there
exactly. It's like being at the table is uncomfortable a lot of the time. But like, if we don't show up, who's going to have this conversation?
And it's difficult because there's like two paths that are... When you're at this precipice as a person of color, there's two paths. You can either leave and form your own thing, which we see with Vogue houses, the Soul Train Awards, which BET. But then as soon as you build that up, you have these financial invaders and colonizers that come in who try to make money off of it, who are not part of your community, who do not stand for you. So you can either take that route, but you know that it's going to get to a point where either if you make it, you will become colonized. Conversely, if you stay in these spaces, you know, every day is a hill to die on. There was this great quote by this Brazilian drag queen, who is the most famous drag queen in the world, by the way, and everyone sleeps on her. She's 24 and she has incredible music, Pablo Vittar. She said, and I don't have it up, so I apologize if I say it wrong. Also, it was translated. But she said, as a queer person in Brazil, every day is a new lion to kill.
Wow.
Because every day one is coming at you and you have to kill it.
Right on time for the Lion King.
Which the trailer dropped.
Oh, wait. No, we're not done with this. Before we break into it. So I said a quote after I was thinking about leaving, and then I was like, no, I need to stay to be the change. And I thought to myself, and these words came to me, that change is an equation of purpose and truth under pressure. And I thought to myself, I should just run for positions within this organization, mm-hmm. not just me being.
Oh no, yeah, you should get in there and fuck shit up. Oh yeah,
and within, I would just like to informally announce that the next time of any organization, that any time there are opportunities for board positions, I would love to consider those.
But then what is the threshold for that? Because like so many of these, especially in New York,
it's like $2,000.
You know, a lot in the city, some social climbers, a whole thing of their resume is to be a board member of whatever organization.
Yeah.
And a lot of those positions are, they have a barrier of like $5,000 dues or
many that I've seen are reasonable in terms of what I can.
Well, not only that, but then also the money that you have to raise through the year. So it's just
right. Like, well, I mean, that is a barrier to entry for a lot of organizations that have board of directors.
Right. Like, which is why you don't see very many
people of color. Yeah.
But piggybacking off of what you said, Zach, you know, not only you talked about two possibilities as being a person of color in these types of organizations. A third one is the complicit one where if the people like us leave, we leave behind the ones that look like us but act like them. That have no interest.
Mm-hmm. Or they don't know.
Or they don't even know.
They don't have, so, like,
whether they subconsciously don't know, or whether they are actively being, who is it now? I used to say Don Lemon, but he since became woke.
Uncle Tom.
Yeah, good old Uncle Tom. Mm-hmm.
Or they feel the same way we do. Or the Stacey Dashes, Lark Voorhees' of the world.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Well, Lark Voorhees is white now, but
so Sammy Sosa.
She's a. I was gonna say that she was like a Fenty too, but she's more like a a Krylon TV paint stick and like ghoul gray.
I hate you. Speaking of Fenty, I had to replace mine today.
Because it broke.
Oh yeah.
And I think whether it's within board positions at any organization or it's positions within those. Beyond just a small a volunteer capacity,
right?
But positions that are elected.
This is interesting. Like, you know, we think about how Democrats successfully flipped the House during the last election, and it's not just in electoral processes that people of color and queer people of color need to show up, but it's also how do we figure out how to become a part of these organizations that are supposed to be serving us or including us.
Right, because I was going to say
the United barriers of entry.
But I was going to say the United States is different than a lot of these organizations that we're talking about. Like, again, I keep on going back to the fashion industry. Or any of those industries that say that they're about
the cause. I think about
the United States
industry,
doesn't say it. We know that there are just straight up racists voting the way they want to vote because they are against us.
Well, but like, when you are like L'Oreal firing Monroe Bergdorf,
when they say in some of these organizations that you may or may not be a part of, they are literally the foundation of them is to be for who you are.
True. And it may say that on their website.
And not just on their website, but
in their
public
mission statements, public, the work they do, the things they raise money for.
The things they say in front of you.
But then to find out that stuff is happening inside the organization and in front of people, it's just like, and then you have people calling it out, and then you get to the point where you're on a conference call, and then you choke. Like, you don't know what's right.
It's like being at a church that says love everyone, but the second they find out you homosexual, you
have another institution
having conversations in private with the pastor.
This episode needs to be called the hypocrisy.
The hypocrisy. I think a good...
The caucasity and the hypocrisy.
I think a good bridge between both of your statements about like the organization and specifically what they say versus like the nation is New York's 14th district that was represented by Joe Crowley for years and years and years and represented by white people.
Uh-huh.
And it's one of the most like diverse areas in the country. It's like an even like 20% split amongst different groups. And
Where is District 14?
That was the one that Alexandria Ocasio won.
Oh,
and
duh.
It was like Queens. The portion of like upper Ditmas, Queens area, then like a snippet of like the Bronx.
Because Queens is like, it's like the diversity.
Top part of Queens.
Exactly. So it was like, you had these leaders who, yes, were saying like we fight for diversity and inclusion, and they may. And Joe Crowley did vote well on many, many things, and he was a great person. However, Joe Crowley no longer represented he should no longer have been representing that group of people. Mm-hmm. And so Alexandria Ocasio, a bartender at a Union Square bar who had to keep a professional set of clothes behind the bar because she had to like go make press conferences after working a long shift, who was, you know, she was a part of the Bernie campaign, and she was the change she wished to see in this world.
In the year, what, 2018?
2018. She's now the youngest.
For the listeners, I know that she was just elected, but I'm thinking like she had to work toward this. So maybe she was working since 2016.
Just working away as a bartender. She, as of now, because she hasn't received like any salary from becoming an elected congresswoman, she cannot afford to live there.
Washington, D.C.
So she is us, and she is being that change. And I thought to myself, that is who we need within any space, is the people who are willing to stand up and say, you know what, no, I know that there's a problem, and I'm ready to steer the helm in the direction it should be.
And people who are willing to like stand like in situations that would humiliate most middle class white people.
Yep.
She's still showing up. She's still doing the job. She's still calling people out on the carpet.
She's the target for every right-wing person because she's a socialist. Yep. And so she has the target on her back.
But again, this is all like when you know who your enemy is and they're clear and in front of you.
True.
And they've let themselves be known as to who they are and how they're going to come for you. It's a whole different thing when, like, it's the year 2018 and you say, oh, yes, I'm with you. We don't need different colors on our flag. We're all one. But, bitch, then you say all this stuff. And then when you get called out on it,
and
it's like, oh, no,
saying,
it doesn't make sense. Mm. Like, so the fact that someone like Cortez has to exist in the way that she does, keeping professional clothes behind the bar and struggling— like, what's the converse situation in that? The one where white people are just helping by using their privilege and saying, and being
and
knowledgeable
out of the way,
but still helping. Yeah, you help, but get out of the way.
Like it's that idea of like when we're talking about
use your privilege, but get out of the way.
Issues that face people of color, and the first people that start to talk are white men,
and then they fuck it
every
up
every time. Every
like,
time,
just shut up and let us talk.
But also use your privilege to push us along to get up to where you are, because the issue is that they feel like they have the power. They have the power of privilege, but then they feel like they have to have a say.
Right.
That's not how it works.
That's not how it works.
That's not how it's going to have to work if the shit that you're saying that you want to be done,
right,
which is the same thing that we want to be done, is going to get done.
Right. The way that you do it is by buying us the microphone, giving us the stage, and then
Getting out of the way.
Stage.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But they want to buy us the microphone, purchase the venue for us, but then be up on the stage too.
And also be the
with their
only
same
person,
old thoughts.
Then also be the only person in the audience.
Exactly.
Well, yeah.
Because they want to feel good about
And again,
themselves.
This is across all industries. I just want to say that. This is across all industries.
But I think
and
it's important
I just
on gay ones.
For real quick, I want to acknowledge that, you know, we have patrons to our podcast who are white men. And who do this homework, and like they don't ask for public acknowledgement.
Right, they're doing it the right way.
Right,
well, our white patrons who might even be involved in some of like the same structures that we're talking about.
But Jonathan, when I was in this space and I was having this dialogue, you did come to my mind.
Oh, okay. on a parallelly related journey, something of which none of the listeners would know what we're talking about, because whatever we're talking about right now, I have no idea what it is.
Absolutely not.
So why did I come to your mind?
You came to my mind because you had some thoughts about the processes and issues that are on the horizon for organizations that specifically identify as gay and cis male.
Yes.
And I said, you know, there is a reckoning happening within gay cis white spaces.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. It is here.
It's here.
The fires of California have spread to here. And it's
up
it's
from
at
the Delta.
Your doorstep. Up from the Delta. The fires of Condor have been lit.
Not the beacons, Jesus.
Straight up
not
the Mississippi.
The beacon.
Or at least we think. Because, you know, the fire is based on what everyone is saying. And queer people of color are saying one thing. But then the thing in the middle is the media and those same institutions that we're talking about.
Right.
But America, as Jose Antonio Vargas of the incredible documentary Undocumented says, America's only going to get blacker and gayer. So
I prefer blacker and queerer.
Well, yeah, this was like 2014, so it's only going to get blacker and queerer. So I think that there will be the tipping point in which there
I mean, it's already like a lot of these. So if we're going to specify on institutions and we look at let's take the example of like a cis white gay dominated institution, people are wondering why those are even relevant anymore.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because
especially when there's so much visibility on queer culture and queer community when everybody is included.
Right. I mean, because now the picture of gayness, especially cis gay white, you know, cis gay and white, like it's all over the place. Mm-hmm. Like it's on TV at least four
times. People are tired
a week.
Of it. But the
they're just used to it. I wouldn't even say that they're tired of it. People have just become sort of like
the reckoning people are tired of it.
I think that it might be some sort of like it's a trickle up in the sense that, like, you know, we're starting to see more and more major ads that within those rooms are like when they're like, okay, we're casting this, let's say like a Target commercial, and we have to have, you know, four couples. They're like, okay, let's have an interracial couple, we'll have a gay couple, maybe it's a lesbian couple. And that's and we're starting to get there that it's required, and that's great. And more, don't ever stop doing that. However, we need to make sure that as QPOC, that we don't get comfortable with that now that gay marriage has been or marriage equality has been passed. No, keep even though the arc of the universe is bending towards that justice, keep making a hard left, because the more that you push for more queer representation and QPOC representation, the more that ship is going to keep swinging in your direction.
You know, it's funny, like I remember
I'm sorry to cut you off, but
go ahead.
That direction is just to get us up to the standard of white
of
men
equality, yep.
Of where they've already been,
right? I remember when we won marriage equality and everybody was so happy. And I was that person that was sort of a party pooper about it. I was like, yeah, this is great. There's still work to do, folks.
I have a party pooper story too.
People got mad at me. And even other queer people of color got mad at me because like I wasn't letting anybody like celebrate that moment and have that victory. And I'm like, listen, I'm grateful this is here. I'm glad this has happened. However, this is going to be basically invisible for most of us who are queer and brown.
How many of you can afford a wedding right now?
Right.
Okay.
Like, and like, I'm glad, like, for most of us, we'll probably go to City Hall, and that'll be cute, and we'll have a cute little kiki function at our homes.
And then you can file joint taxes.
Right.
Good for you.
But, like,
people still dying of AIDS.
Like, exactly. Like the AIDS epidemic is still enormous in New York City. All over the place. Like, if you are a person of color in this city, the chances of you having HIV is still 1 in 2. And then economic disparity, not just of people of color, but queer people of color inside of our
communities.
Oh,
that's only widening.
It's getting worse.
I don't know if you all remember it. But
for
like,
trans women of color, your
murder
life
rate
is in danger all the time.
It's exponentially increased the moment that you become a trans woman of color, yeah.
And then when you have people who are queer from outside of this country coming here for asylum, like, your life is triply in danger.
On both sides. Like, and then if you get sent back.
The Justice for Roxana hashtag that, mm-hmm. that's popped up this week. A trans woman who was trying to come to the United States for asylum ends up dead while she's in ICE containment. Mm-hmm. From, and they're calling it, she died from dehydration, but they, in the autopsy, they saw that she was beaten to death. Mm. She had symptoms of diarrhea, and mm-hmm. She came here because she had an HIV diagnosis also, mm-hmm. and she couldn't get the treatment she needed when she was home. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, mm-hmm. you know, mm. like, I'm glad some people are sitting comfortable and pretty with their wedding ring on, but like, wake the fuck up, because people are literally dying.
And still dying.
And need your help.
Well, Clay Aiken...
Actually, I saw a picture of him the other day. It was not good.
It was not good. No, I saw him when he hit me up on OkCupid years ago, and it was not good then.
I saw him on Tinder.
And I was like,
he's
no.
always on there.
Yeah,
he can't like afford an actual matchmaker.
Well, I mean, you know, when you're easy to use
it. He and Ruben Studdard are doing a show here soon.
So he actually had a really interesting quote.
Sorry for 2004.
Let the Bush era stay in the Bush era.
Never sing songs with specified dates in the year, like 1993, Much More by, that's like One Nation Under.
Like it's 1999. I like that
Well,
one.
Yeah, that's the only one.
Yeah, because, that's acceptable.
I mean, because Prince is amazing.
And he wrote that like in the 80s, right? Yes.
But what about the Cleopatra 2525 song in the year 2525?
That's not, because we're all...
Okay, so anyway, so Clay Aiken had a really great quote, because I think he was running for office, a local office.
Like governor or something.
Yeah, he was running for a local office down in Florida at the time, and a reporter interviewed him. It was the morning of Orlando at Pulse, and it was the same cast that many of us were seen in that featurette. Mm-hmm. And he was like, what happened last night is an illustration of like, I'm misquoting him, I understand, but like, he said something to the effect of what happened last night is an effect of the mentality against LGBTQ people. It should also be noted exactly what night that was on. It was Latin night. It was very targeted there. He's like, but also, do you know what I want to talk about? Since we're having this moment where America can feel sorry and sad for the gay people shot. Look to your states. Look at the laws that are there. This is institutionalized hatred. Mm-hmm. Gay people, LGBTQ people can still be fired for no reason from any statistics of 34 states. Mm-hmm. That's why this is happening. And mm-hmm. I was like, Clay Aiken, go off. Don't hit me up on OkCupid ever again, but go off. Tell her more.
Well, like, you know, I think about even closer to home, and I think I've probably mentioned this statistic a million times, but I think about the homeless youth in this city, mm-hmm. and half of them openly identify as LGBTQ, most of them are queer youth of color, mm-hmm. you know? And it's because there's a lot of rampant homophobia in communities of color. And so I feel like it behooves our cis gay white friends out there to pay attention to those statistics, because queer people of color, especially when they're young, are super vulnerable. And... Mm.
So the stuff that's happening after gay marriage has been marriage like equality.
There's not enough beds in this city.
Homelessness.
To house the homeless people in general. Mm-hmm. But then there's not enough for children. People who are still of the age to be considered children. Like... there's a lot of stuff that needs to get fixed.
Yeah. And this is all in the face of y'all celebrating the fact that you can get married now.
Well, I still have yet to receive a single invitation, but that's a different matter altogether.
We'll be right back. We will be right back.
bothers me, what bothers me is that we get to these Pride months and we look at the statues, you know, at Christopher Street, and we celebrate down there, and we have, you know, our bars there and our groups and organizations that are there within the village. And that's sort of like this epicenter, this ground zero mm-hmm. of the movement. And mm-hmm. What bothers me is that we look at the village people, the band,
right?
As, look to them as what the village was during this movement, mm-hmm. because the village people were at the height of an era that many other groups, you know, and movements were founded in of this period of the 70s within the village. Mm-hmm. And if you look at how the village people look, now look at how you look. You are now, you know, your friend circle is all established white cisgender men of a certain income bracket. And now you live where the village people used to live. Mm-hmm. All of those POC who were around them are gone from that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Where you look at the pier, they're all gone. You look at Paris is Burning, those spaces that they could occupy south of right, and 80th are gone.
Right, and you watch that movie for entertainment value.
Exactly, and for not because, quips.
Yeah. Right, and not because you're watching real human stories.
There's definitely something to be said about exactly what you're both talking about right now, and I don't know if there's been a documentary or if there's been a study, but I really wonder about the evolution of the cis gay white man since marriage equality, or even
before that.
Before that, when they were truly super oppressed, you know, because when shit was happening to white folks, then shit started getting done. There were riots, mm-hmm. and it wasn't tainted as anything bad.
Well, riots started by people of color.
Yeah. And so, so there we go. Like, they reap the benefit of this thing, and then right. they get canonized. Is that the word?
Well, yeah. You look at America, and
but
you
they've
look
aspired
at the groups.
Above all of that, and now they have kind of assimilated into.
It's a totem pole.
Yeah,
and they've moved up. In that totem pole, you have heterosexual white cisgender Christians. And then from that, who are of a certain income bracket, and then down that totem pole, there's all of these different subgroups in America, and they all do not care about each other. They want to get to the top of that pole. And the problem is that they'll never get to the top. White women, it doesn't matter how many times you vote for a Republican candidate, you won't get to the top. Gay white men, it doesn't matter how many token parties you can get invited to at some, you know, cis white couple of a certain age in Indiana inviting you to Christmas as
or how many times you voted for Trump.
Or how many times you voted for Trump. You ain't gonna get there. But what happens is the people at the top will pit like a totem pole. And this is what one of my former bosses told me when her dissertation was on this. A totem pole for each of the links, there's usually two extensions that happen on either side. Sometimes it's wings, sometimes it's ears, sometimes it's just mm-hmm. general accoutrement and sculpture that happens to the sides of the face.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so literally talking about a totem pole.
It is literally a totem pole. It is a Pacific Northwest pole.
Okay.
On each side of those accoutrements or appendages on the side, the status quo will assign two groups and pit them together. And you always see that in the media, it happens. White women are pitted against black men. Mm-hmm. You see that in the narrative of black men being predatory to them. Mm-hmm. You see that in the narrative of every narrative of on both sides of them yeah. fighting with each other. Black women are often pitted against cisgendered gay men, mm-hmm. and you see that in the narrative, which is a true narrative of white gay men stealing from black culture, mm-hmm. from black women, mm-hmm. and then them always like arguing and fighting between each other. And it moves down for every group. And what I will say is that this argument does in no way says we're all the same. We should come together and fight the real enemy. A, that would be a perfect world in which we could all realize that, but we won't. But what I mean to say is that we're never going to get to the top. Mm-hmm. We can't. So rather than, you know, thinking that you will and not caring about QPOC who are right next to you, know that you won't ever get there. Stop acting like you're a white man at the top and you're straight, and help the people who are struggling with you, because those people on their backs is what built your movement. And also on their ancestors' backs is what built your country.
Hmm. But there's no accountability.
None.
Ultimately, there is no accountability, right? Not in this totem pole example, not in life, not in these institutions. Mm-hmm. There's no governing force. There's no articles of impeachment. There's no vote of confidence. There's no vote of no confidence.
Mm-hmm. Well, like the thing
you can't remove these people. This is their social life. This is their personal choice. This is why the bubble has been allowed to grow the way it has.
You develop teams and you develop committees to help combat problematic behavior inside of different organizations and companies. And then the policies that you help create end up getting turned against you.
That's when there's no leadership or HR or something like that.
Right. So
no accountability.
Right. So but then you have leadership also turning those things against you too.
Mm.
So sometimes it feels like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Right. I realized that before in one of the volunteer things that I do in my life. I kind of just took a backseat and was like, you know, whatever happens, happens.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
But then the other day happened.
But then a lot of stuff kept on happening. And I was just like, what the hell is going on? Like, again, y'all are saying that you care about this and that. But then you elect people and you put people in these positions. And it's like, and then they say they have a record. Child, it's just a mess. Like
it's
the Trump administration.
You thought the swamp would be drained.
Yes.
But you thought the wall would be built.
Well, that never gonna happen. Right. No, where's the wall?
Where's she at?
I mean, what I will say in terms of like feeling is like damned if you do, damned if you don't. Even though those words can be turned against us. And even though they will fight us at every step, at least when we go to bed at night, our conscience is clear.
But that's the problem. They go to bed at night and they think that their conscience is clear, too. Because
Judgment Day comes.
Okay. Well, when is Judgment Day coming? That is a question.
It never gonna happen.
You know, like, I feel like also.
Well, it's supposed to happen in 1840, but then again in like 1938.
No, it's supposed to happen like last year.
2012, right. 2014, 2018.
Yeah. Right. 1999.
So Y2K. I think also part of this is also a call to action for people of color, especially queer people of color, to think about how we create opportunities for one another, mm-hmm. and how we build each other up. And do it outside of I don't even want to say creating our own totem poles, but building our own house,
mm-hmm.
you know, and looking at the contributions each of us can bring to the table and thinking about how we can challenge each other to move toward excellence in everything and to do it in spite of not having the same financial resources that.
So are you saying? Break away from the main group and just do your own, like be the BET, the ballroom.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm saying this as a person who is striving on their own to be a creative professional. Sometimes the answer is when you can't find the opportunities to create it yourself. Sometimes that's the opportunity. And, you know, as someone like when I late teens and early 20s, I was, you know, my dream was to be the Broadway person. And I then shortly realized there are no opportunities for someone who looks like me.
Well, they're doing the In the Heights movie now and they're asking for people. So,
I mean,
one of my friends was in the Heights and she's white. Well, Jewish.
The opportunities are few and far between, and someone has to be casting for those things.
But in terms of the opportunities, I think that A, you should always be creating them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in terms of, you look at government as in government of, and positions uh-huh. and positions of power uh-huh. in any place, that if you think a POC or a woke person or someone should be in that position, but there are financial barriers, then that's why PACs are formed. And maybe that's a route that people should explore of like, okay, well, it's going to cost X to get a seat at that table. And I can't afford it as an individual. But perhaps if we, you know, get collect ourselves as a unit, mm-hmm. then we can. Mm-hmm. So make those PACs, girl. My Venmo is at Zachary Earth.
My Cash App is $ call me Jolie.
I'll use Cash App. What tricks are you pulling? Because that's a trap app right there.
What I would also say is that, you know, when there is an opportunity for you to help somebody out, take it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I want to roll it back real quick. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, we can make our own thing, but I like to hold people accountable to what they say.
No, absolutely.
And if you say you want me, and like, let's just say that, like, it gets to the point where, like, they're feeding you so much lip service to the point where they're like, we want to celebrate you. We're going to take our resources and we're going to, like, do this thing mm-hmm. for you. And at some point, it's like, I feel like it's lip service, but mm-hmm. then also mm-hmm. you're doing the work. But then as we're doing the work, are you involving those people?
Mm-hmm.
In the case that I'm thinking about, that is the case. But then you have this same parallel stuff going on the side. It's like, how could you be the same group of people that you're doing this wonderful thing, mm-hmm. but then you're allowing this really horrible thing to happen as well? Yeah, it's just, it's crazy. It reminds me of like Ujamaa and Ujima. Yeah, the two principles of the seven principles of Kwanzaa, both of them dealing with collective work and responsibility and then collective economics, respectively.
I don't even.
So, yeah, I'll just go rewind. I just like to hold people accountable yeah. to what they say they're going to do. And if you say that you care about me, then show it. That's point blank. But I do feel you on the go and make your own thing, too.
Yeah, it's a combination of both, I think. Like, when the opportunities aren't coming, create your own. Mm. But if you have the opportunity to get in there and fuck shit up.
Yeah, if you can collectivize.
Do it. And when you're
similar to the Kwanzaa principle.
Well, this has been certainly a cathartic episode.
Yeah. We meant for this to be something light and cheerful and airy.
We even said it was going to be light.
This is going to be a light and cheerful episode. So let's talk about racism.
Yeah, it's just so pervasive. But I think, you know, this is this QPOC life. And when everybody on the panel is feeling a certain way, you know, you just got to talk about it. And this
sometimes you just need to self-therapize.
QPOC 101 thing here. Marriage equality was not the be-all, end-all. White people evolved into something else, forgetting about queer people of color and all of the issues that face them. And it's shown mm-hmm. in the facade that since they've evolved and since they've grown, now the next evolution is, at least in this weird branch of Jim Crow racism and all of that, is gay people, gay white cis people acting like they care, or just the world at large saying that they care about this thing, but really just treating us as checkboxes.
Convenient props.
To make themselves look
better.
They
think they're about to get raptured up there into the halls of white power.
I don't know what
that was layered.
It was very layered.
That was like Patti LaBelle's macaroni and cheese. Thank she you. Had layers.
Thank you.
Does she do lasagna too?
I don't know, but we should call her and ask her.
Yeah. Have her on the podcast.
You can get her information. But yeah, get at us. You know our Twitter information at this QPOC life. You can get it and get at us in our Facebook group or even our Discord channel.
Discord channel.
People have been joining and I didn't even realize.
We've
been having it
on Discord. If you're wondering about where, you know, as I've said multiple times,
it wasn't in the intro.
No, because it's fairly new.
Okay. Like a month and a half.
Can you send me the link?
Since I've had that new computer. So yeah. Since it's been hot weather, I was wearing shorts when the Discord was
made. You got billed for, like, what is it, $800 for the extra server or whatever?
That foolishness. And then they just took it off.
Hmm. You should have sued him.
I should have. Trying to get me to pay for a private server. I'm not Hillary Clinton. Or Melania. No, who was Ivanka Trump?
Ivanka Trump.
She's the new one.
Our channel is called... Yes, This QPOC Life. We are on the Discords. I will include a link in the show notes.
Yay.
And let's key all day, all night. Well, not all day, all night. I do like to sleep sometimes.
We've all played Overwatch.
Yes,
recently.
Yes, we have.
With other wonderful QPOC friends.
We could be like This QPOC Overwatch.
Yeah. Come on, a new team. We may not win, but man, do we look good.
Because, Lord, I've been getting them Symmetra kills, though.
Yeah.
Because Symmetra's queen.
I just put down on turrets.
I hadn't played Overwatch in a very long time. I didn't even know her ult was this giant wall anymore.
Oh, yeah, they changed it to the wall. Yeah, she built the wall.
She's a brown person.
You know what?
So what we learned is
Symmetra is problematic.
Well, no, we learned that
she's aspiring to
whiteness. Sometimes people say not in our town, but in reality they mean okay, fine.
And on that note, I'm Jonathan, aka Blasian FMA.
You may call me Jolie.
My name is Zach. And wait, before we go, actually, Peter just texted a group chat I'm in. And Peter is a POC friend who I've known for many years. And he said, this is a good closing note. I'm on a date in Montclair, New Jersey, listening to a Chicago cover band after listening to an oboe recital. And I'm asking myself, how did I get here? And I replied, white privilege, Peter. White privilege.
And this is...
This QPOC Live! This QPOC Live!
This episode of This QPOC Life was recorded at Brick Arts Media in downtown Brooklyn, New York. Remember, you can talk to us at This QPOC Life on social media and our website, www.thisqpoc.life. You can also email us using ask@thisqpoc.life. If you enjoyed the show, please share us with your friends and rate us on Apple Podcasts and Facebook. Thank you.
And Google Podcasts.
And Google Podcasts. You can rate on Google Podcasts.
And Spotify.
It's amazing. Thank you for being a part of this QPOC family.
Family.
Goodbye.